You're listening to World Talk Radio, where the world comes to talk.
World Talk Radio.
Comic fans, when we come back after these messages, Gary and I will discuss the change in the comic market over the last 20, 30 years, and the change not only in the comic market itself, but in terms of grading and terms of the collector's outlook on the marketplace. We'll be right back after these messages.
Care for a mint? The best place to find CGC mint-grade comics is at www.ColossusComics.com. Colossus Comics, Inc. is known for quality eBay auctions and for its CGC 9.8 subscription service for new comics. As a CGC 9.8 subscriber, you can choose from any ongoing series. Colossus guarantees a CGC 9.8 grade on every current issue of your series, delivered to you along with unslabbed reading copies. For shipping included, $33 a month. Colossus Comics subscribers also get first access plus discount pricing on CGC 10.0 and 9.9 copies of their title when available. To become a 9.8 subscriber or link to Colossus Comics auctions, visit ColossusComics.com. Comics Guarantee, LLC, also known as CGC, is the comic book hobby's only independent third-party expert grading and certification service. CGC's restoration detection, pedigree, and grading experts are known and trusted all around the world for their keen eyes, knowledge of comic book history, and consistent grading. CGC has the best tamper-evident, state-of-the-art comic holder our hobby has ever seen for safe storage of your favorite comic books. Go to www.cgccomics.com to find out how to submit your favorite comic books for certification and to see why the world's top collectors and sellers use CGC for safely buying and selling comics through the mail or on the internet. For more information, call toll-free 877-662-6642 or visit CGC at www.cgccomics.com. CGC. It just makes sense.
World Talk Radio.
The number one source for informative talk on the World Wide Web.
World Talk Radio.
Interested in advertising on any of our shows? Please click the advertise link on the homepage or send an email to ads@worldtalkradio.com. Or you can click on the sponsor this show link on any of the show pages.
Welcome back to the Comic Zone on WorldTalkRadio.com. I'm your host, Vincent Zerzolo, here with comic dealer extraordinaire, Gary Dolgoff. Gary, welcome back to the Comic Zone.
Thank you very much.
Hey. So, Gary, let's talk a little bit about, as you're coming up in the business in the your late 60s, early 70s.
Sure.
So you're at these shows, guys are giving out beers, they're hanging out. Were you one of the, from what I heard, Phil Suling had a kids section or a junior dealer section? Were you in that, or are you...
No.
You just went straight to the big leagues?
In those days, all of us baby, so-called baby boomers at the time, because post-baby boomers probably weren't born yet, without, you know, so, or barely. So the junior deals were probably people who are even younger than, they're probably kids like 15, and I was a big kid at 19 or 20s.
Okay. So, what were the, how much were booths back then? How much was a table?
Oh, Phil Suling's, at his first show in 68, they were $10 a show, and the second in 69, they were expensive, 2 for $35, inflation. And in 68, there were 5 Marvel Comics number one from 1939 for $275 to $300 a piece, and in 72, Action One wouldn't sell for $275. Larry Bigman couldn't get the price, he had to accept cash and trade.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Wow.
These are books that are worth like tens of G's now.
Yeah, yeah, at least.
Yeah.
What, now, when you were at these shows, did you have a big enough bankroll to like buy out other dealers, or how did it work back then?
No bankroll, nah. When I was starting out, I would save my allowance money and my lunch money and buy books And I would have, you know, I would just buy and sell on a very small scale because that's all I could do in those days. Mm-hmm. And I just got to know people because I would just like buying and selling a lot, and I didn't accumulate a lot of comics.
Was there a hot book back then that's still hot today that's been consistent throughout?
Yes. Time News were always the best. They were always the gold standard of comics. And Captain America 1 was probably the best, and It's still a great book. Captain America's in general, especially the first 19.
Interesting. Now, were there titles back then that people used to basically poo-poo and now are very highly regarded?
I'd say so. Oh, yeah. Let's start with some of the love comics. Like, people used to take the glove comics and sell them for next to nothing. And even more importantly, the horror comics. I used to buy them by the bag off Passaic, New Jersey for 50 cents a book in the later 70s. And now they're worth anywhere from $5 or $10 up to $40 and $50 and up.
Well, sure, and in higher grades into the thousands and of dollars, yeah. Yeah. No,
in those days also, sorry to interrupt, but on those days, good and near mint were worth almost the same. If you look at an earlier Overstreet price guide, he's been doing it for 35 years.
Yeah.
In the earlier Overstreet price guide, mint was 20% more than good. It was all the same.
And those were the only two columns.
Exactly.
Good and mint. Wow.
Good and mint. Well, no, they had good, fine, and mint.
Okay, fine.
Yeah.
Right.
So a book would be, six, let's say, 10 in good, 11 in fine, 12 in mint.
Huh.
And nobody cared.
That's a big difference.
Yeah, really.
That's a big difference. But mint books back then were probably more like, what, VFEF Plus books today?
Or maybe fines even, fine pluses.
Really, sir? I mean,
yeah.
mint books could also be mint books back then because they would come right off the newsstand.
Yeah. I mean, I remember once when I bought some Fiction House comics in 1969 or 70 that from this warehouse that came out, and the Planet Fours were so beautiful, I thought they were fakes. And at the time, they were $10 each.
How common were warehouse fines back then?
Common? They were fairly common. People would have books they stored, and people would buy them out from distributors or the companies, and then they would have just warehouses of stuff. It happened a fair amount. People kept lots of stuff, and they used to be prevalent in the old days.
Does it shock you, or does it surprise you? Well, I mean, I guess it wouldn't, but as time has gone on, you've seen less and less of this type of stuff surfacing because it's all gone.
Yeah, a lot of it is in the hands of collectors who don't wish to sell it. Although they may, as they're starting to loosen the grip a little bit as they near retirement age.
Right.
But then there's always ready people to pluck it up again because it's such cool material.
Yeah, but I guess what I'm talking about more is, you know, those types of warehouse finds or giant, you know.
Oh, they're not coming up.
It's not around anymore.
No, it's a pity.
Yeah. I've been doing this since I was about 16, so it was in 1987. I used to buy a collection once a month, a decent Silver Age collection in New York. It was easy. And now if I get a great Silver Age collection once or twice a year, that's amazing.
Yeah, that in itself.
Original owner with great runs and stuff like that. It's not as prevalent. They're not out there as much.
No, they're definitely not. And it's a pity, even though they're worth many times what they're worth then, people just don't feel like selling them. And warehouses where people just have these books stored away, I feel most of them have been bought by now.
Yeah, I'd say I'd have to agree with you on that. What made you stay
in comics?
In comic books all the years?
Well, I was going to college, and I was taking journalism classes and acting courses, and I enjoyed it. But what I really loved was comic dealing. I just enjoyed the action. And I was making phone calls for comic deals in between classes. So finally, with 16 or 18 credits to go, I quit college, and I said, I'll do comics. And I didn't have a driver's license. I was 28, even though I rode a motorcycle at age 18.
Right.
So I would take gypsy cabs, San Juan car service, so they didn't know English, and I would just have them go to convention. I'd load those station wagons down. They were very good sports about it. And I would just go to the conventions with stuff. I mean, stuff didn't add up in those days, but it was fun.
Yeah.
You know, now I'm in a warehouse situation in Massachusetts, and I enjoy buying and selling, mostly mail order, and it's just a lot of fun, and I have a great crew of people.
Now, it's hard to imagine a guy who's so New York like you are moving up to Massachusetts, up in the country. It's beautiful up there. I visited you many times, and your warehouse is fantastic. There's so many great books in it.
Thanks.
But how did you do it? How did you make the transition?
Well, it's always, by the way, it's always a pleasure having you up there, Vinny.
Thanks.
You're many times.
You're very
What I did was, I used to visit up here several times a year, and one thing is I love good restaurants. It's because I'm silly, but I love good restaurants. This place is a town of 30,000 with over 50 great places to eat. It has coffee houses, and there's a fair amount of New Yorkers in this area, so I'm never bored. I love hiking, so I joined this Pioneer Valley Club. I met my present lady through leading dinners and walks for the hiking club, where I'd pick a dinner spot, we'd walk 3 miles to my house and back, and that's how we met. I took her out to see the Batman movie for our first date.
Really?
Definitely.
That's excellent. Do you want to send a crazy mad shout-out, Happy Valentine's Day, to her?
Yes, Cindy, mad Valentine's Day shout, I love you.
That's great. Nice, yes, Gary. That's wonderful.
The only difference we have is she, unfortunately, is a Red Sox fan, and I'm into the Yankees, of course. I'm a Yankee fan.
Yeah, well, that could be a problem. We might have to, you know, bring her down to New York and strap her in at the Yankee Stadium for a couple of games. And
I've already suggested something like that along those lines. Yeah.
So that sounds wonderful. So, but you know, you have not to stray off of comic books, but it's interesting that you like going hiking, but you're also you're into motorcycles too. So
yeah,
you
know what it is? It's three. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, go ahead. You please.
Three different worlds, and I always joke to folks that there's not many folks who are comic people who like to motorcycle and hike, but comic book folks who also like to hike and who like to motorcycle. But I'm into all three worlds. I love the outdoors. I love leisure time, but I love working on comics, too. Mm. So it's kind of interesting.
Now,
it keeps me young.
What's that?
It keeps me young.
That's a good thing. You need that. Tell me a little bit about how your business runs in terms of, you know, more what you really go for, what type of stuff you're buying today.
Well, the stuff I love to buy is, my first love is to buy Golden Age comics, 40s and early 50s and 30s. In all grace. See, I like them. I don't only like them if they're beautiful books or pedigree special books. I like them even if they're beat up or they have torn covers or a piece out, because these to me are a piece of history. And other people agree. I've cultivated a clientele for all grades. They know the grading is unabashedly strict, so it does it. I love buying Golden Age, but I also like buying large collections and lots of 60s books and 70s and original art, of course.
Now, speaking of the Silver Age, at one time you were partners with the Koch brothers, I believe.
Yeah, Koch's.
And you guys had bought out some giant warehouse.
Yeah, we did that in 1987. I had known about this deal over 10 years before, and one day a guy from England called me and said he bought over 1 million comics, and I said, "Oh man, that's a deal that's supposed to be mine." So I went to see him, and he said, "You come to buy me out?" And I was like, "Boing." So I went over to Pete's house, and I stood over him, and because I had the key to his house at the time before he was married. I said, "Pete, get up. The time has come. The time has come."
Now this is
I told
Pete,
him, we have to get up right now and go work out the deal, and the rest is history.
This is Pete Koch that you said?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. And so you and Pete went over. Now, where was this?
The guy told me not to mention his name, but it was in the city.
Okay, all right. So it was in New York, and you and Pete Koch go, and you see a million
books.
We went
to see the guy, and I had brought them there over 10 years before. And he had the list of the books. He had all these old books in bundles. He had tied them up in bundles of 100. So he had 100 copies of X-Men 10 or Daredevil 10, hundreds of them. And we bought them out. We paid them off. Joe Koch came in to it, too. And we bought the books out. We put them in the Brooklyn warehouse. And then in 89, I needed to spread my wings again. So I got MySpace in the Brooklyn Navy Yard, and we split up 1.5 million comics.
Wow. How hard
was
that
quite
to do?
A task. I'm sorry?
How hard was that to do?
It wasn't that bad because they knew, you know, we trusted each other, so we split up the books, and we had other people help, and we just did it.
Now, I've seen 1 million books in a warehouse. Explain to our listeners what 1 million books look
like. Okay, here's what it is. 1 million books weighs as much as a herd of buffaloes. I mean, that's what it is, you know? Each 1 million books, picture this.
Yeah.
A comic book box holds 300 comics. It's about 2.5 feet long and almost a foot tall. Now, picture a box of 300 books. Now, if you have 3,000 books, it's 10 boxes. Now, 300,000 books is 100 times 10, 1,000 boxes. So picture, audience, 10 boxes, then picture 100 units of 10 boxes, and that's only less than a third of it.
Yeah, it fills up a warehouse.
Oh, it fills up a warehouse the size of almost a football field. Like the Javits Center would be filled up by this. I mean, that's how crazy it is.
That's amazing.
And you know what's really crazy? We had to grade a lot of these comics. So, I mean, that was really nuts.
Now,
we had to grade them, get them bagged, and, you know, and pay the expenses, and, you know, we had to do it.
And was it mostly Silver Age or bronze?
It was
or
all, there was a lot of, there were 70s, but the highlight was 60s.
Uh-huh.
There was tons of 60s.
Now, I remember hearing tales about this, and I think one of the first times I came to your warehouse in Brooklyn, I saw, I think, some of the remnants of this. And I remember buying copies of X-Men number 12 from you that I think were from this collection.
Yeah.
And they were gorgeous. And I can only imagine. What's that?
They're unread. Nobody ever read them.
Yeah.
And they were in string-tight bundles, but they survived well.
Yeah.
And they were kept in dark places that they wouldn't be, like, faded by the sun.
Yeah, no, they were gorgeous. They were really gorgeous. I think even back then, you know, very, very high grade books, and I think I kept one of them for my personal collection. They're really, really nice copies. Now, what would you say if you had to look back over your career, what would you say was that the biggest deal you ever did, or was that the
biggest, but since then I bought a deal out in Connecticut about 5 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
That was miraculous. And the owner was such a nice guy. He said that, "I hope you make your money many times over." And it was a very nice collection in that I was finding Hulk 181, the first Wolverine, in 9-4 that I didn't even know were there.
Wow.
And it had four X-Men 1s and VF minus the VF. And it was a very nice collection. It worked out, you know.
How many books was it?
It was a mere 85,000 or 100,000 books. And so it wasn't as big, but it was a nice collection in that everything was from the 70s and back, just about, or early 80s and back. And there was a nice collection. It had a lot of surprises that I didn't expect in high grade.
That's always great when you have a lot of surprises in the collection.
Yeah.
You said you were coming to New York next week for the comic convention. You're going to bring a lot of different types of stuff, or what will you be concentrating on, though?
Okay, well, what I'm going to do is, first I'm going to bring about 3,000 different. Every book will be different, 1960s, DCs, and Marvels, and every single book will be rigorously graded. My VGFs will be industry standard, fine plus to VF. Fellow dealers buy them and guide by my grading for resale, no kidding, because they can up the grade so much and still be legitimate.
I can attest to that.
Thank you, appreciate it. So, you know, I'm going to do that. Then, besides that, I'm going to bring a few boxes of $5.60s, not junk, but solid condition, and DCs and Marvels with title dividers that get picket easier, which I haven't done in the past. And then I'm going to have $3.60s, and then I'm going to have tons of warehouse 70s. I have hundreds of thousands of 70s, Marvels especially, and they're going to be unbagged 70s Marvels where they can look at them in their nice copies for $1.50 to $2 each, and then I make deals if they want to buy 100 or more.
Sounds sweet.
Yeah, and I'm going to have that, and then a lot of 50-cent 90s and late 80s, but only really top titles, no junk. Fantastic Four, Daredevil, Batman, X-Men, and Spider-Man titles, all mainline with title dividers. I'm going to have thousands of those at 50 cents a piece if they buy like 20 or 30 or more.
Nice. Sounds like a sweet deal. Sounds like I'll have to be hitting up your booth early on.
Yeah, and one more thing. I'm going to bring at least 2,000 or 3,000 40s and early 50s, strictly graded, pre-code books, horror, superhero, all kinds of stuff, and I'm going to bring that with me as well, and I might have a few CGC Goldies.
Sounds wonderful, and on that note, we're going to jump to our second commercial break. We'll be right back with more with Gary Dolgoff here on the Comic Zone on WorldTalkRadio.com. ¶¶